Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson. More and more people are concerned about how animals are raised, and it's figuring into their decisions on what they're buying, where they're getting their meat, and how it's raised. And more farmers and ranchers recognize that fact and are just trying to do a better job. Well, one person that's been in the middle of these conversations is Dr. Temple Grandin, and she's with the Animal Science Department at Colorado State University, and she's agreed to visit with us on Farm to Table Talk. Temple, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
It's really good to be here.
Well, Temple, why do you think it is that so many people are interested in what you have to share? I mean, I know that last year you spoke at EcoFarm, and there were organic farmers, and there were small farmers getting started. This year you speak at American Sheep Industry Association, you've been to the Cattlemen's Associations. A wide, wide spectrum, and I think literally all over the world. What makes people so curious about your message?
Well, people are getting more and more concerned about where food comes from, especially younger consumers. And one of the good news on all sectors of the livestock industry is one sector that has improved is slaughtering. That has gotten better. There's still some small, little tiny plants that are not federally inspected that might still have some problems. But compared to the 80s and 90s, there's just been light years of improvement. And that started 20 years ago when large customers started auditing plants. And I developed a very simple way to evaluate the plants. You know, not a whole book full of stuff. You had to make certain numbers. If you have more than 3 cattle out of 100 mooing and bellowing in a stun box, then you better get it fixed. If you have more than 1% fall down, you need to get it fixed. It was, you know, making numbers. And when we first started doing this 20 years ago, the main cause of bad stunning with captive bolt was broken equipment. That is a management issue. And it's not perfect, but it's a whole lot better. And the slaughtering is actually the easiest part to fix because it's pretty much the same whether it's a big plant or a little plant.
Well, you know, it used to be there were a lot more companies that were in the meat packing business. I mean, now you end up with the red meat industry, what, there are 4 or 5 companies that that control pretty much a large majority, I don't know, 80-90% of the processing, I believe, at least in the United States. Are all of them open to following the directions and suggestions that you make in their handling?
Well, the big companies have had to do it. You know, the big plants are all audited by customers. In fact, they've got video auditing where Aerosite Company tunes in into their plants on a remote camera over the internet, see what's going on. This solves the problem of somebody acting good when they see somebody with a clipboard. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say things are perfect, but compared to the 80s and 90s, there's just no comparison in the improvements.
Well, and how about communicating that? Are they telling their customers that they're using more, I don't know what you call it,
No, ag has not done the best job on communication.
Right.
And in fact, I think social media has made silos worse. People mm-hmm. just talking to like-minded people. There's actually some papers online with titles like Measurement of Online Social Bubbles. Mm-hmm. And people need to communicate, and they're doing less and less of it, and just staying inside the group of people that sort of has the same opinions about things. And that's true in every subject, not just agriculture.
I think I've seen some of those papers, Temple, where people have tested that. They've created
that's
personalities
right.
of themselves, and then they find that the algorithms on Google end up giving you what you're looking for. So whatever your bias is.
This is the reason why I like my news on the old-fashioned paper, and when I get on a plane, I buy a New York Times and a Wall Street Journal, because I like my news balanced, and I read both of them in the paper, and it's not getting changed around with an algorithm.
Well, it seems like both of those publications are kind of puzzled about what the near future is going to be. They're all trying to figure out what the new world will be with all
the
political
changes. Well, I'm very concerned, very, very concerned about fake news. I think that's really a serious problem.
Yeah.
And the other thing I think is a problem is people are not reading deeply about issues. You know, I have time to read. Got a lot of time on planes. I'll watch a movie every once in a while, but I read a lot of different magazines and a lot of different stuff, and you find out that on many, many things, things are not as simple as it might sound.
Well, you know, Temple, that's one of the reasons I'm doing a podcast, is that people don't have time to read anymore, but they do get stuck in traffic, and they can be listening to something as they're driving.
They can be listening, that's right.
Or
another thing is not good is, you know, Big Ag and Little Ag, you know, throwing stones at each other. They're both part of ag.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good way to look at it is sort of like the craft beer industry. You know, that would be similar to some, you know, the organic and natural farming. And that's going to get to be a significant percentage of the industry. And then you've got the big companies, and they both are ag, and they have their place. I had an interesting trip to Quebec just this December 2016. Gave a talk at a pork conference and found out that, you know, grain's very expensive in Quebec. So in order to compete, they're doing these straw-bedded group-housed pigs, and because they can pay for the grain doing that.
Well, and that's happening apparently all over the United States too, and around the world.
And they're doing a really good job, and I was impressed with a lot of things I saw in Quebec. Canada's doing some very progressive stuff on developing equipment for group housing of pigs. They've got some really good. Good new equipment, and it's affordable, too.
Well, why wouldn't that come across into the United States? Why is it, do you suppose, that they're leading in Canada?
Part of it is, in the French part of Canada, they have European equipment available, which doesn't seem to come into the U.S. as much. A lot of French systems and some really nice, not very expensive electronic cell feeding. Now, the big mistake that people make with electronic sow feeders is put too many sows on one feeder. That is a big number one mistake. You're going to have trouble if you do that.
Well, we have to slow down and explain. We may have a few people listening here that don't even know sows are, you know, the mother pigs.
Well, sows are adult female pigs that have piglets.
Now, the one thing they get concerned about is they hear about equipment used like gestation crates.
Well, some of that stuff needs to change, and even big companies are starting to switch those things over. And there's a lot of different options. You can go for getting rid of gestation stalls and going with group housing. And my feeling is let the industry innovate. I'm not going to tell you which system to use, other than that if the electronic sow feeders do require computer skills. So that's one requirement for that.
So the sows could go, they go into an individual stall, but they can leave again. And is that right?
There's several different systems. You can do electronic sow feeder. You got a bunch of sows in a pen, and they have an electronic key in their ear tag. Open the gate and give them just their allotted amount of feed. You know, another type of system is free access stalls. They're non-electronic, and the sows are free to come and go, and then they all go in there to eat. You can house them in small groups. There's a number of different ways. If you want to see big farming done well, you can go to Fair Oaks Farm outside of Chicago. Fair Oaks Farm and Pig Adventure, they are also going to be opening up a new a cage-free chicken house that's going to be open to visitors for egg layer hens.
I've been there, and I had a chance to see that they were putting in, they had gestation crates at the time that they were taking out and putting in
different
systems. They got rid of them all. How do you feel about gestation crates?
Oh, I think it's something that needs to be phased out. There are some of these extreme confinement things that just have to be phased out. But on the other hand, we still have to do a large scale of commercial with a certain amount of, you know, intensity. And I found out a very unfortunate thing that happened in Colorado several years ago. I remember going a good number of years ago to really nice outdoor pig operation in eastern Colorado, pasture pigs. And then you stop hearing about these pigs. And I found out a couple of years ago that when we had one of our horrendous, horrible snowstorms where we had 20-foot drifts across the interstate, the pigs were died. They got snowed in. You know, nature can be harsh. And the chicken systems, we're still going to need to have ones that are intensive. I just saw a new cage-free system that's solving some of the problems with previous systems with dirty air and dirty eggs.
Well, you know, this is where scale gets into it. When you talk about Fair Oaks, they're a really big farming operation.
Yeah, it's really big. That's right. They're a really big operation. That's right.
Now,
and I think they've been very progressive on having that open to the public.
Well, I do too. And so if you're near Chicago, I think it's maybe less than an hour or a little over an hour out of Chicago.
It's just about an hour away.
That you can come, and it's right near the interstate, I believe, and you can get tours. And they used to also do the same thing with their dairy, that you could see the calves.
Oh, no,
born.
You can do the dairy. You can do the dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way that works is they have a bus that takes you out to the dairy barn, and then you get off the bus and you go up in the loft, and you can watch the milking of the cows. The bus drives through the barn.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the cows. They can't let everybody just wander around everywhere. There's too many people. But you can see everything. They have a calving cam. You can watch the cows have their calves. And the pig operation, due to biosecurity, they've got it all glassed in. Mm-hmm. But you can see the whole thing.
Well, you know, Temple, people seem to be critical right off the bat of just large scale. Is there any reason they should be? Is there something inherently a challenge being a large farm, that they're more likely to have problems with the way their animals are treated than a small farm?
It gets down to management. I've seen badly managed small, and I've seen badly managed big. I've seen well-managed big and well-managed small. It gets down to management. And the thing that you have to make sure you don't do is overwork and understaff. That's where you get into trouble. A big farm can work just fine as long as you've got the right amount of staff there. And another thing that helps, if you give each stock person a piece of it, like for example, the pigs in this room, they're Jane's pigs, and maybe Jim's pigs are in the next room, and you give them ownership. Sort of figurative ownership of a certain part of it, so that it isn't just like looking at a sea of pigs. There's a certain amount of pigs in certain rooms that they're in charge of. And that really helps.
Well, you know, you're famous for a lot of things. And one, I don't know if it's fair to inject the fact that you have a special autism and seem to have an ability to have insights much more than the average Joe.
I'm a visual thinker. I think completely in pictures. Animals don't think in words. So when I first did some of my early work with cattle handling, it seemed obvious to me to get down the chute and see what cattle were seeing. And one thing I noticed at the slaughterhouse, they'd balk at a reflection, they'd balk at a hose on the ground, they'd balk at a shadow. If it was too dark, they wouldn't go in, chains hanging down. And I found that if you remove these distractions, then they walk up the chute easily. And being a visual thinker, it was obvious that those things, I ought to be looking at those things. If you're not a visual thinker, Then I discovered when I was like in my late 30s that people tend to not see those things unless I give them a checklist of the things to look for.
Well, if you're watching a team, a staff, is there something you watch for that you see the picture of people that are working livestock, for example? Because you said that...
Well, on working livestock, what I've found, I've trained a lot of people. That's about 20% of people that when you train them, they have the knack. You give them a little bit of training, they just do it. Then there's a lot of other people you have to supervise pretty closely. And then there's maybe 10% of people that should not be working with livestock. But one area where we need to really improve is the status of stock people needs to go up. You know, people handling cattle, people farrowing out pigs, doing a lot of different jobs. Because these really are, you know, skilled positions. And a good stock person is actually a highly skilled person. I went to an interesting seminar last year at the Banff Pork Seminar in Canada. And there was a veterinarian from Nebraska describing switching from gestation stalls to group housing. And they had to find the right, calm, laid-back person to be their hug whisperer to teach the young pigs how to use the electronic feeder. And this person had to be a real patient person. Not everybody had the patience to do this.
Well, does that start with the hiring? I mean, can you tell when you sit across the, you know, from somebody that's applying to work for you, and you had a livestock operation? I mean, what do you look for when you hire them in the first place?
Well, I know what they said. Now you go look up their paper online, you won't find this in the paper. But this one guy was kind of a hippie with a bunch of tattoos and kind of laid back and sometimes late for work, was actually the best hog whisperer.
Can you tell them? Can you? Can you spot somebody when you talk
to
them?
You can't tell interviewing them. You've got to get them out working with the animals for a bit, and then you can tell. You can't tell them when you interview people. And then there's some people that like to be mean to animals, and they just shouldn't be there. And I cannot emphasize enough, do not understaff and overwork. There is no way a person is going to care about animals if they're working an 11-hour shift and it's 100 degrees outside. You know, those last few hours are not going to be very good.
Well, you know, I wonder if that's not one of the reasons there's mistrust of big companies. They just assume that big companies might try to cut corners or will not have...
It gets back to management, because when I was doing all these slaughter audits all the time, you know, we'd have two big plants that were exactly the same, and one was working absolutely perfectly, and the other one had problems like broken equipment, and that was management. And I've been out on some little farms that have been horrid, and I've been out on little farms that were wonderful. It gets back to management. And even if you have a big corporation that might have 8 beef plants, there's quite a lot of variation between the plants with the local manager.
You know,
and then some corporations on the whole, I think, do a better job than others. But so much gets back to that local manager insisting on standards.
You know, I want to skip back over to the consumer now, because there's a lot of consumers that might be listening to this, and they're going to say, you know, I wish I could be sure that the people I bought my meat from used good practices and didn't cut corners and they had good management. Is there any way for people to know that?
Well, I think one of the places that are audited by, you know, a whole lot of customers usually have better standards than the places that are not audited by a lot of customers. It's about that simple, because I can remember the bad old days. First thing we had to do, and this was back in 1999 when the audit program started, is we had to go and fix all the broken stunners and get them on a verified maintenance program.
What's a broken stomach?
And that alone made a huge difference.
What is that? What do you mean a broken stomach?
The stunner for shooting the cattle with. The gun you use to shoot the cattle.
Oh, my.
It's a captive bolt, and it has the same effect as a high-powered firearm.
Oh.
But it's a bolt that just comes out, and then it retracts back in. And since this is a tool that hits hard, it has to be carefully maintained, like the finest hunting rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's not going to work right.
Well, let's just go through the major species real quickly, because what I'm going to say is like poultry and pork and sheep and cattle. So if we started with poultry, what are the areas that you think need special attention?
Big issue in poultry, and let's separate laying hen from meat chicken.
Okay.
The big issues on animal housing are going to be pigs, because of gestation stalls.
Yes.
And laying hens, you know, the small cages. Those are the animals where there's been some of the most contentious issues on housing.
Mm-hmm.
Animals like beef cattle, for example, if you have organic beef cattle, they're basically raised the same way
mm-hmm.
as regular beef cattle,
mm-hmm.
where for organic pigs, you wouldn't be allowed to use gestation stalls.
Well, then let's go back to poultry then. You're saying the laying hens in particular.
The laying hen, yes.
So what do you think about the different types of facilities that they keep experimenting with of size?
Well, they keep experimenting and they keep improving things because a great big survey was done that Joy Mensch worked on, University of California, where they looked at conventional battery cages, the little tiny small things. They looked
mm-hmm.
at what's called a enriched cage or a colony system, where it's a cage, but it's a bigger cage, more birds in it, and it has some amenities that birds want, such as a nest box, perches, and a place to scratch, and it's high enough so the birds can walk around using their normal head bob posture, and then you have various cage-free systems. There's a lot of different cage-free systems, ranging from really good ones to some that are not so good, and they compared 3 systems, and the colony house and the battery cage were about the same in terms of production, but the cage-free one that they tested has a lot of problems with dirty air, dirty eggs, and a high death loss.
Well, and that's one of those challenges, because consumers think that sounds like that's always the best.
Well, yeah, and that's a challenge, and the death loss is clearly not acceptable. So then they came up with a new system where the birds live on decks, but they're free to fly back and forth, you know, across the corridor, and that cleaned up the air a lot. It reduced the death loss. It's still not down as far as it should be. I had some ideas on some experiments to do with the nest boxes that might have helped on some of that. but there's people doing some really innovative things. But the problem is, you know, we can have our, you know, our small, you know, our niche markets. I'm going to go back to the craft beer and the regular beer, and they both have a, you know, a place in the marketplace. And we still have to have, like, a large-scale commercial. We need to have a better large-scale commercial. But we need to figure out how to do cage-free where we don't have a triple the death loss. That's not acceptable.
Are there any concerns?
Now, they've gotten it down. Yeah. They've reduced it a whole bunch, but it's still higher than the Colony House.
So let's talk. Let's mention the sheep industry for a minute. Are there any areas that you think need to be special attention as far as producing sheep or processing lambs?
Well, sheep slaughterhouse works just fine. A lot of them use equipment from New Zealand. And if you're interested in looking at slaughter stuff, I've got videos: beef plant video tour with Temple Grandin, lamb plant video tour, pork plant video tour, and turkey plant video tour. So you can see exactly how they work, how the slaughter plant works. Mm-hmm. And it just starts with unloading. Some of the videos start out on the farm, and it just goes through the plant and explains how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just explains it.
What about in the production?
In a real matter-of-fact way.
What about production practices themselves as far as before they go to the slaughterhouse?
Sheep are actually quite easy to handle. They follow the leader, and they're one of the easier species to handle at the slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm. And then cattle, there are things they do with cattle, like branding and dehorning.
Dehorning, people are working on breeding it off. Angus cattle are naturally polled. Now, the Holstein is harder to get dehorned. Now, you can use gene editing to take the horns off. And the way that works, you don't add new genetic material. What you do with CRISPR, that's the name of the gene editing method, is you snip out the little piece of code that makes the horn. And then the cow doesn't grow a horn.
Would that
and
be
the advantage of doing this is it would enable you to use a wider variety of genetic lines and not have horns.
Now, would that be considered GMO?
Well, GMO is you take DNA from something else and insert it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it depends on, you know, on the, like, all the GMOs that were used in crops. You take other DNA and you insert it.
Mm-hmm.
Where gene editing, you either rearrange the existing DNA or you snip out a piece of the existing DNA. That's what you would do to get the horns off.
So the net effect is that they wouldn't have to be dehorned in the way that concerns some people.
Because you could just, and dairy is one of the areas where if you could just snip out the horn, the little piece of code that grows a horn, you just snip it out.
Well, how do you keep track of these interesting developments around the world? You mentioned you found something in Canada, and I'm sure Scandinavia as well. How do you keep yourself up to speed on people that are, or practices that seem to be going the right direction as far as handling
livestock?
Well,
I always try to get out and visit some farms. You know, get to visit another country, say, we got to go do some farms. I read a lot. I look things up on Google Scholar. Google Scholar is a great source of information, scientific articles. Google Scholar is basically the science Google, and you can use it for any field. And all you do is type Scholar into Google. Then you'll see a link that says Google Scholar. Click on it. You get a new search box. You use just like regular Google, but it gives you scientific journal articles, book chapters and textbooks, and technical papers.
Mm-hmm.
It will not give you strictly commercial sites, you know, like a feed company or something like that.
Well, you had one suggestion earlier in this conversation for people that live near Chicago or northern Indiana. They could go to Fair Oaks if they want to see.
I think they should go to Fair Oaks.
Are there other places like that that they're able to see how the livestock are being treated that you know of around
the country?
Well,
in Denmark, the biggest slaughter plant in Denmark's open to the public.
Is that right?
Yep, in Denmark.
There's a lot of things. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's open to the public. Now they have it fixed where it has walkways and you look through windows, but you can see in there and see everything.
I got to ask you, Temple, you're so enthusiastic about this whole area. As you look ahead, if we're going to create imaginary pictures of the future, what makes you most enthusiastic about what we see in the near term as far as how livestock are treated?
I'm getting more and more interested in grazing management and how you can use grazing to improve the land. We have huge amounts of land in this country and other countries where it is impossible to raise crops on the land. There's not enough rain. There's not enough groundwater. The outback of Australia is a good example. And the only way you can raise animals on this land, the only way you can raise food on this land is grazing animals. There's no other way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do them right, they improve the land. And I learned from a soil scientist, and I think this is really good. We had a soil scientist come to our cattle meeting, our International Cattle Symposium. My department invited him. Really good. Because I learned something I did not know 2 years ago, that the Mali soils, the very best soils in Illinois and Iowa, were created by herds of grazing bison. Bison made that land. Grazing animals made that land what it is. And we need to be getting the livestock and the crops together in a rotation. And there are some very innovative people rotating forage crops, livestock, different grains, different crops together, and improving the ground in the process.
Well, Joel Salatin, that was on the show recently, I mean, he makes a big point about that. And yet I see him getting in arguments when he's out making presentations. He was just at one I saw in Europe. The people that are so critical of livestock because of the methane and that believe that they're contributing too much to greenhouse gases and that they're
not sustainable. Well, some of the methane figures are not right. That livestock's long shadow did not factor in the whole life cycle of the car, like what it takes to make the steel and to mine the steel.
Well, I hope you keep getting out and telling these stories, and I really appreciate your taking the time to visit with me today on Farm to Table Talk, because I always get some inspiration, and today I came away with some more things, too. I mean, I like it that you were explaining how people that care to know more about it that can look at the certified organizations and look at the companies that are checking how their livestock is being produced.
Well, more and more companies. It's been very, very interesting taking managers out to farms and slaughter plants. And when I first started doing this, now again, that was 20 years ago when I first started, man, I saw the undercover boss moments, just like that show.
Mm-hmm.
It is so important for managers to get out of the office, I don't care what business you're in, find out what's going on the front lines. And that's why Southwest was such a good airline when Herb Kellerman was the CEO, because he did an actual job on a regular basis, like baggage handler, ticket agent, and flight attendant.
Well, and then that gets back to your other point that I think was the biggest point we've made, or you've made in this conversation too, and that is being careful about the people that you hire, that they're important jobs, that you're watching how they're working with the animals, and taking the time and not cut corners on that front.
Yeah, and you cannot overwork and understaff, and there's a lot more interest now in good stockmanship. But to do good stockmanship takes time. You can't just rush through it. You get, work on getting to know your individual cattle and how they act. I mean, that's going to take some time to do that. But good stockmanship pays. There's a lot of research that shows that animals that fear people are less productive animals. You can look that up on Google Scholar. A guy named Paul Hemsworth. There is lots and lots and lots of papers that stockmanship matters. But what I find is, people want the new magic thing, a drug, a piece of equipment, a computer. They want that more than they want the people management, the stockmanship side of it. I always say they want the thing more than they want the management.
Well, if they
and the older I get, I'm getting more and more into the management. You have to at least have adequate equipment, but you don't have to have state of the art.
Well, let's go back to Google then. You've pointed out earlier you have to be careful about what you look for and what they get you when you start Googling things. But
I would recommend a lot more Google Scholar.
And if people want to find your articles or YouTube,
I've got lots of articles on Google Scholar. If you want to look at those, you can go on Google Scholar. You type in Temple Grandin. You also need to do T. Grandin, because some of them are indexed with just the initial. And you'll find a lot of my scientific papers. I have a website, Grandin.com, just my last name. It's got lots of information on it. I have a book, Improving Animal Welfare, A Practical Approach. Improving Animal Welfare, A Practical Approach. And one of the things I really emphasize in that book is measuring definite outcome-based indicators. Like, for example, in dairy. How many skinny cows do you have? Lame cows. Cows with sores on their legs. Dirty cows. And if you measure those things, then I can tell, am I getting better or am I getting worse? Because you manage what you measure.
Boy, I tell you what, you are an inspiration to so many people. And keep up the good work, Temple.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.